Hello and welcome to a locked down remote version of Floating Swimming Stories with me, Joe Minahane. My guest this week is the poet, screenwriter and theatre maker Molly Naylor. Molly and I go a long way back. We're very, very good friends, and she was an integral part of me putting together my retracing of Roger Deakin's Waterlog, and driving me all over the country, taking me to amazing swimming places all over Norfolk, where she lives now, and Cornwall, where she grew up. Molly and I caught up in April 2020, and she was in Norwich at home, I was in Brighton at home, and we had quite a long and wide-ranging discussion about everything from swimming for anxiety, swimming now and where you can and can't do it, and what swimming will look like after this and how great it's all going to be. I really hope you enjoy our chat. I'll be back at the end, but for now, happy listening. So this is a remote Floating Swimming Stories, because obviously we're not allowed to go and have fun in the water with friends anymore. Not for a while. So I'm in my bedroom surrounded by laundry and a crib for a baby that's about to arrive. Molly, where are you? You're at home in Norwich, correct?
I am. I am. I'm sat in the corner of my corner sofa, not to brag. And I. This is sort of just where I operate from now. I just like wedge myself into the corner sofa, and I do bits of work in here. I eat dinner in here, and I scroll mindlessly through the internet, hoping for answers. This is where I live now, and could be worse. Could be a lot worse.
Yeah, that's. It all feels like a very distant dream when we were going swimming all over the place. I was trying to work out how many times, and not how many times we swam together, but how many times we swam together when I was researching my book and then after that. And I think maybe it was like between 15 and 20. So you're like number one swim pal.
Yes, good. Well, that's into my competitive nature. So
this is purely in terms of numbers, Molly. I mean, I'm not. Yeah, I wouldn't. I say this to every guest. I can't remember. I was trying to think the first one we went on together, and I think we went to Cove Hythe.
It was Cove Hythe, yes.
And it was this time of year, wasn't it? I remember it being pretty cold.
It was pretty cold, and I remember picking you up from the garage, and did that funny thing of when you sort of. You know someone a little bit, but then you realise you've got to spend an hour in the car with them, and you don't know how it's going to go. And but it was fine.
It was fine. I mean, yeah. What I would say is, like, I didn't. So, like, you know, obviously, to give sort of people a bit of background, like, you and I both went to UEA in Norwich, but at different times. And so, like, we know each other through friends, but then Molly sort of became my sort of swimming. Pal, really, and chauffeur.
Yeah, because I'd always been into swimming growing up in Cornwall and stuff, and so when I heard about your project, and it sort of tapped into two things: my big love of swimming and my big need to be liked. And I was like, I can help somebody and get to go on some swims, but also I just love the idea of the project and like the idea that the idea that it was this sort of long-term thing, and that you were chipping away at it in this very gorgeous and sort of slow and curious way. And at that time, you didn't even know you were going to write a book. You were just like, I just want to do this thing. And I really liked that. I really liked the fact that it was like, you know, you weren't this like super ambitious like nature writer guy. You were just like, I'm doing this thing, and I don't know why, but it feels good. So that really appealed to me, and I was like, I want to be part of this.
It's funny because that I was trying to work out when it became, like, you know, for me, when swimming, like, though doing those swims sort of became from, like, something other than just, like, you know, me chipping away at it, and became a book. And actually it was something that you and I spoke about when I'd done my wrist in and had a sweet breakdown. and it was actually, I just remember being in the bar at UEA for like this, their 50th anniversary knees up, and I had a cast on my arm, and I wasn't feeling very good about myself, and you were like, do you have anxiety? And it was just like, hello.
That was really weird, wasn't it? I sort of look back on that and I think, Why did I ask you that? Because that's a sort of weird thing to ask, but we were just, yeah, we were just sort of having a really nice time. And then I don't know what compelled me to just be like, do you ever suffer with anxiety? And you were like, yes, mate, just a bit. And then it's always lovely when you can talk about mental health stuff in a way that doesn't feel like a big sort of dirty secret, a big like weird confession. It's just like, yeah. And that's
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, that was sort of around, that was definitely at that point where I realized that like the two things were dovetailing in quite a weird way. And like I've been using, I think the last time I recorded an episode, I recorded with Joe Dunthorne, and we were chatting about, this was in January, and it was like swimming, the urge to swim was like pretty low for me over the winter, to be honest. And I did, but not as much as I have done previously. And I was saying to Joe like how the swimming wasn't particularly doing much for my anxiety at that point, but I had like a really, really shit start to the year anxiety wise, and was like just coming out the other side of it when we all got told we couldn't leave our houses anymore.
Yes.
And it's funny that like, I've actually found that the swimming has been really, really good for me in recent weeks. I basically live in like the most fortunate position for someone like me, like living as I do right on the seafront.
Yeah.
And like being able to sneak one in the mornings.
Your daily exercise, right?
Yeah, that has become my daily exercise. And I know that some people frown upon that, because like going alone is seen as it's been dangerous. Or I would say is I'm not like going out like, you know, 100 yards, I'm going out like 10, and I'm going at the right times. I'm taking the necessary precautions. And there are people...
Right, and I feel like everything that we're doing at the moment is a weird exercise in sort of risk management. And go to Tesco and it's a risk, and it's, I think everyone has got to just make their own decisions, haven't they, about what feels right and and balancing like mental health with not being a twat, you know, and not putting others at risk, and that's always a balance in normal times, and it's becoming
acute,
more of one.
I mean, that's the thing. It's become what I've really noticed, that so this week my new therapy guy was just like, you need to be swimming more. You talk about it all the time, but you need to be swimming more than like once or twice a week. So I've gone like 6 times in the last 8 days.
And it's interesting though, isn't it? Because I feel like with the work you've done over the last few years, like there's like the book. I mean, there's like the swims and the book, and then there's also the other work you've been doing around your anxiety. And it's like, it's like, do you see them as like, sorry, I'm like interviewing you now.
No. Is it like a conversation, Molly? It's fine.
Yeah. You're right. Because if it's you're interviewing me, you're gonna come up short. Cause I can't, nothing. But like, I was wondering about how, like, does it feel like the same project? Like, does it feel like one project is like my anxiety, and one project is like how I feel about swimming and nature and all of those things? Or like, are they the same? Because obviously, swimming hasn't solved all your problems. That would be too kind of pat, wouldn't it? So what's the relationship between those two journeys?
The project is the anxiety, 100%.
Yeah,
like that's what I've sort of realized, is like that is the project, is like not how I'm going to feel in the future. The project is how I'm going to feel right now if I'm not, you know, if I'm not tending to it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, that's for a variety of, you know, reasons, and for a variety of things that are going on, you know, as I mentioned, I'm becoming a parent again. So that's like really important that I'm, you know, in my best mental shape. I think that's the thing I've actually really struggled with like in the last few weeks, is making sure that that side of it is really tended to. And, you know, as you know, I do like yoga and stuff like that as well. And, you know, sort of meditating has been really good. But like swims are such a, like, they are a really key part of it, because that's sort of my big thing. Like the shock of the cold is still, you know, so addictive. I think, you know, that's what's really interesting to me, because when you and I first met, I remember like packing a wetsuit in my bag and you were like, mate, fuck off.
And I know, I'm very macho about that. I apologize.
But what's interesting is that I can't remember the last time I put one on.
Nice.
For a lot of reasons, like, you know, A, because I actually can't find, well, one of the big reasons, I find them a massive pain in the ass to clean up and like, you know, get dry. But also, like, I need that, like, I don't need a long swim. I don't need more than a minute if it's cold. Like, I just need the shock. I just need the sense of being alive. because that's something that you and I are pretty much on the same page with, right? Like, we're not front crawlers.
Absolutely not. No, I hate front crawl. I hate backstroke. I hate butterfly. I hate like trying to swim fast. I don't really have much form as far as the strokes go, but I've always loved swimming, and it's always been for me about the feel of my body in the water and being held, I guess, by that. And also, like, I was a very sort of graceless kid, and I went to ballet, tap and modern dance classes like every Saturday for my whole childhood, and I didn't want to go. I hated it, but I just went because I thought my mum wanted me to do that. And then but I like that like made me have a really, really odd relationship with my body, because it wasn't my natural, you know, I didn't feel at home there. And so I've grown up being very uncomfortable in my skin and very sort of don't feel like I move through the world particularly gracefully or elegantly. And so but that everything changes in the water, right? Because you're just being held in a different way. And so when I'm in the water, I just feel like it's like this massive sense of relaxation. And for once, I'm not worrying about like what my body is doing. It's just there and it's lovely.
So you learned to swim, is this right, in the harbour at Falmouth? Or did you go there for school lessons?
Yeah, well, so I could swim before that. So I went to school. I went to school in Flushing, which is opposite where I live in Falmouth, over the water. And so... It was like a little tiny, tiny fishing village. The school was right on the water. And like, amazingly, like they don't do it anymore, but amazingly, we used to swim in the harbour, in the sea. Like we used to, you know, they used to do open water swimming every year. And they would like get their teachers to kind of like be like three teachers in dry suits, like spaced out at different points in this. Like, it's like the second deepest natural harbour in the world. It's like super deep. And we would all the whole school would like traipse down there, and we'd all swim up and down and, you know, clock up as many lengths as we could. And I was like 8 years old. No, I was maybe like 10, but like I swam 600 meters in the harbour in Falmouth. And that was just like a PE lesson.
That would break me now.
It's so weird to look back. And we used to go off the steps of our dinner lady's house. And so when we came out of the water, we'd all go and have a bath. Like, we'd take it in turns to have a bath in her actual house. There'd be like three kids in the bath at once, and then we'd like, how is this just a normal thing that happens?
But that's the sort of thing you hear, and it's like, oh yeah, it was the 1950s. I'm assuming this is like the early 90s or the late 80s, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was like 92 or something. Like, it's so funny.
Not
I don't
that
know
long ago. That's still touching distance to me, you know? That's bizarre. I mean, I never had those sort of experiences. Like my gran, I remember Tab, that like she learned to swim in a pool just off of the River Stort in Essex. But like that was in the '30s. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, it's very surreal to look back at that and feel like it was only yesterday, but also feel like there is no way in hell that would happen now.
No. No.
And it's really interesting, but I'm very glad I had that experience because, you know, I remember it very in a lot of detail. You know, I remember like lots of things about it. And that's obviously because it was an unusual thing or a sort of, yeah, formative moment, I guess. And how wonderful at that age to feel so at ease in that sort of water, you know, and feel completely safe.
That's the most amazing thing about it. It's just to normalize it, because so I would have seen that. So, you know, Molly and I swam together all over Cornwall because Molly drove me from London to Cornwall. This is before I had a driving license. Drove me all the way. Drove down from Norwich, picked me up, and then drove down to Cornwall.
I did. Wasn't I fantastic?
That's very kind. It's very kind of you. We ate a lot of service station sandwiches, and then Molly basically chauffeured me all the way around Cornwall for like 4 days, and then we went to the Scilly Isles. Now, those swims are like still some of the best that I've ever done. Were you, like, when you were growing up, did you swim a lot around the county, or were you just swimming around like Falmouth, like places like Durgan as well?
Yeah, we were swimming a lot around because my parents are big walkers. So every weekend we would go walking somewhere, which at the time, you know, I'm a kid, I hated. I wanted to be sat off playing Mega Drive and eating Wagon Wheels. But I was like, amazing walks. Still do. And but yeah, so when it was the summer, we would go to the beach. Although my parents are not, they were never kind of like, so they were never kind of the kind of family who would like go to the beach and set up camp. Do you know what I mean? Like, my mom hated that, and my parents hated being around other people. So, and it's, you know, as you can imagine, Cornwall in peak season, it's very hard to find a beach where there's not other people there.
Yeah.
So more likely that we would like go for a walk and then maybe I'd have a little dip at the end. But it was, I don't think it was really until I was like late teens going on my own terms that I found a real love for it. And I remember when I was like, first time I started like getting drunk as a teenager, I would always be the one, you know, we're like drinking cider on the beach, someone's got the didgeridoo out, all of that shit. I'd be the one being like, let's all go skinny dipping, or like, let's go swimming, you know, like, yeah. And I think at the time it was me being a bit like, I wanted to be the wild one because I didn't feel like I had enough of a personality. But I don't know if I think it was also just a bit of like, let's feel something, in the same way what you're talking about is like the cold, you know. I think I always loved that feeling because I was never like big into like taking drugs or, you know, being wild in any other ways. So I guess it was like my thing, and still is to some extent. Like I'm quite quick to tell people, like say if I go on a date or something, I'm quite quick to tell people, like to boast about the fact that I swim all year round. It's like, it has become a bit of a sort of defining thing about me that I get a bit macho about. But it's just because I sort of swear by it, and I sort of think that it is gonna, like, it would make anyone feel amazing, but people don't know that because they just think it sounds like the most horrific thing in the world to go, you know, to do a dunk in the sea in January. And I'm like, I know, and it is, but then it's the feeling you have later that makes it worth it. And that feeling is like, oh my god, it's just incredible, like the way you feel in your body.
And it's what it does to your nervous system as well. Like, I've been talking a lot about this recently in therapy and stuff, but about, you know, what it actually is doing to your nerves and to your brain is so fascinating. And how it,
so tell me about that, what's going on?
So, like, I mean, I'm still like struggling to sort of get a lot of my head around this, and like, especially with the research that they're doing in the university of Portsmouth is doing research into this, and the anaesthetists down here in Brighton, but have been, I'm assuming it's all sort of on pause at the minute. But you know, the stuff about how it, you know, how it basically sets your fight or flight into overdrive, but like, it essentially teaches your brain that, like, you know, this is the worst that can happen, and look, you're surviving it, and so you're coming out. So when you're dealing with all your day-to-day anxieties, it's just like your brain is able to bat them off, because it's like, well, you got in the water, you did this really scary thing that's like, you know, the cold, like, you know, that actually does, you know, instill your like very primal senses. And what it does, you know, is push those, you know, I think it's the ventral vagal nerve. Someone will probably write in and tell otherwise, to, you know, to be your overseer and just to be the leader self, I think they call it, just to see everything from up above and just put everything into perspective. It certainly does that for me. And
yeah,
I mean, it's that feeling that you get, like you say, it's the feeling you get initially when you get out, but it's like that thing a few, like, you know, especially in the winter. And even now, actually, because it's still bloody cold in the sea, like it's sub 10 degrees, like, you know, you're going to feel it, and like for hours later. And it's really fascinating. The more and more you do it, the better it gets, you know, going in most days. Because when you're able to leave your house, where's your go-to spot in Norfolk? Is Munsley your...
So Waxham is the closest to me as the crow flies. Waxham, which is Sea Pauling, which is maybe like 20 miles, if that, from Norwich. And so that takes me 40 minutes to drive there. And it's beautiful, but it's not sort of like mind blowingly beautiful, but it's just right. And it's like really good, distance from the car to the beach. You know, you can hop back in. There's like lots of seals there, which is lovely, but they don't take. So yeah, that's where I would go. That's where I go if I'm like, I just need to swim. You know, I'm not going to walk. I'm not going to hang out. I'm just going to get in the water, and it's pretty glorious.
So, And then what about, so where's the other, I'm sorry, so we went to Waxham once, didn't we? And that was, so that's where you go over the dunes, isn't it? When you arrive and you sort of pop over the dunes and into the, or am I thinking of Steve?
Yeah, no, same place, basically. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And the last thing about going then, to Norfolk is that it's never that busy. So like in Cornwall, you know, you really have to time it right if you don't want to just be sort of constantly surrounded by people. Whereas in Norfolk, even on the hottest summer day, you're going to be able to find a little bit of beach just for you, which is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, like the issue that I have, like where I live, like, you know, obviously I live in like, you know, the most readily accessible beach from London. So, you know, and even at my, I live, you know, east of the centre of Brighton, but even at my end, like, you know, you go down there on a July day, unless you get down there at like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, you're going to be, there's going to be a lot of people swimming. And then obviously if you go there any time after like 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, the beach is going to be packed. I mean, I'm really intrigued to see what that does, what happens to that this summer, because obviously the beaches are empty. Yeah, you go, what's interesting, I say they're empty, you go down there, I've been going swimming at like 7:45 in the morning, and there's the same people swimming every day, you know, well spaced out, you know, no one's gone on top of each other. And it's really funny to see like how everybody's like, you know, finding their own little pockets within it. But, you know, you can't, like, here, that's just, like, finding a quiet swim. Even if you cycle along the undercliff to, like, Rottingdean or Saltdean, it's pretty hard, like, to find a space where you're not going to be, you know, on top of someone. It's very, it's not, like, it's not the same as the Cornwall thing where the whole beach, because obviously Brighton Beach is all stones. It's like everybody's pretty much at the tide line, so you've got ready access to the water, whereas, you know what it's like in Cornwall, like, a sandy beach is just coated with...
It is, and I it's funny because I don't mind that as much as, so like, because I grew up with my parents having this, like, they were really obsessed with, you know, this idea of like not being around the tourists, you know, it's a big thing, the tourist industry in Falmouth, like, right, we've got to find a bit of space, and I totally get that, but actually I don't mind it as much you know as they did, and so actually there's Going to a really busy Cornish beach, and like there's something nice about the interactions you have with people in the sea, right? Like even if it's quite busy, it's like it's very different because you're sort of all bobbing around in this thing and you're all kind of happy and having a lovely time. And actually, I don't really mind a crowded sea, you know, because you're always, the sea's massive, right? You're always going to be going to find a little bit of space for yourself. So I quite like it. Mm. I like the way that you often just start having a little chat with somebody who's bobbing about near you, and it's very different. Like you wouldn't do that on the sand, you wouldn't just like start chatting to like some guy by his windbreak, but in the sea it's like this great leveler where you're all just like, oh, here we all are, it's not too cold today, and you know, it's just a little bit of a bonding experience, I find. But
it definitely in the winter, like there's that sort of very real sense of everybody, you know, you're all sort of in it together. But it is quite nice because in the summer, you know, even in the summer, like it is relatively, you know, if you're not used to it, it is relatively cold, you know. And anyone who tells you it isn't is lying. Like, you know, 20 degrees isn't particularly, you know, it's balmy by current standards, but like it's also not particularly warm. Like you don't want to be hanging out in there forever. And there is that sense, that bonding sense that I do really, really, really like. But I'm just sort of intrigued to see where it all goes this summer, because like my, you know, I had these sort of ideas of like swims that I'd like to, you know, try and do this year, like rivers I'd like to get back to. And it's really weird how like they're just not gonna, like the Lido's probably aren't gonna open. And like that just makes me feel, really sad, you know, I've actually not really been to Lido's that much since I've moved to Brighton, just because the sea's right there.
Oh.
But, you know, because I suppose, do you go to the, Eton Park, is it in Norwich? Is it Island Park or Eton Park? I can't remember.
No, neither of them do. The nearest Lido to me is...
Oh, there was one there, wasn't there?
That's many years ago. But it's Beccles that's my nearest, which is lovely, but it's heated, so that makes it incredibly popular. So it's a bit of a nightmare to go to, and when the river's really close, I would always just rather go in the river, because, you know, there's no one in the river. They're all in the Lido. So I actually, yeah, I'm very, haven't done hardly any Lido swims. But I would, yeah, it's because I guess they're much more of a city thing, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like when I lived in London, like, you know, Tooting and Brockwell were go-tos because they were easy to get to. They were the easiest accessible piece, you know, the bodies of water for me. And I, you know, I do have a special place in my heart for them. But it's weird, like, since I've moved here, I think I've been to Pels in Lewis, which is amazing and, like, you know, river fed and really beautiful. I think I've been there twice. And I'd make sure I go on overcast days because it's just like you can't get in there on a hot day. But I feel so much for those guys because they all care so much about swimming and, like, they're basically not going to get a summer this year. It just sucks, you know. It's, I'm sort of trying not to, yeah, I don't know, catastrophize too much about these things. You know, there are, I suppose, there are bigger things to worry about. But that is, you know, it's interesting that, you know, there are a lot of people who love swimming who may be listening to this who are not going to get to go to the water this year and attend to their mental health through that. And that is of concern as well.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's only a small thing within the whole scheme of things, but the mental health aspect of this thing really fascinates me and worries me.
Too, because I think it's really positive that I feel like the kind of sanctioning of exercise as part of people's lives at the moment, obviously that might change, I think is really good because it's at least an acknowledgement. I mean, I don't want to kind of like give our government too much credit right now, but like it's an acknowledgement that is an important part of life. And I wonder if this had happened 5 or 10 years ago, that might not have been sort of, because we've had the culture and the discourse around mental health has been so much more prevalent over the last 5 years or so, 5 to 10 years, that I think I'm really glad that is in the conversation, whereas it might not have been at a different point. Because it's massive, isn't it? Like there are certain things around mental health in terms of sort of basic upkeep that are just feel like no brainers now, but were very much, you know, not in the discourse a little bit ago. And I'm really glad that exercise is one of them. So, I mean, let's just really hope that isn't something that gets taken away. And I know in London that there's, you know, people are sort of making decisions around closing parks and things, which is like understandable and super, super worrying.
It's really short-sighted. I think that, you know, that's what, you know, it's fine. You know, I live in a flat, but I've got a garden, you know, and I'm really fortunate. But I know you have a little balcony, but it's not like, you know, you're blessed with like a huge, huge amount of outdoor space to go and, you know, look at a view or anything like that. And I just think that, you know, like you say, it's great that it's mentioned and it's talked about. And I know that when they locked everything down, it's like, you know, you need it for your mental health. I think it would make me so, so angry if they decided against that, because, you know, that, you know, it's weird how like anxiety is now, like, you know, it's front and center and it's what everyone's talking about. And it, in a way, it's like, well, yeah, this is how I've felt or have felt on and off for a very, very, very long time. And you're right that perhaps even when I start, you know, started my sort of swimming projects and stuff, that, you know, it wasn't something I certainly wasn't comfortable talking about openly, because it wasn't like something that, you know, everybody, you know, it seems a bit strange that if you were open about that kind of thing. Whereas now it's just like, you can't not be. Or you can't.
And it's sort of, it's less pathologized now. It's less kind of like there's less of an idea that like everyone is normal. And then there are a few people who are strange because they have quote unquote mental health issues. And it's now more seen as like everybody has the capacity to have poor or good mental health. And it's not this kind of, you know, thing that happens to some people. It's something we've all got to be looking out for. And in a situation like this global pan-ED, it's like, well, if you create a situation where you stop people from tending to their mental health, then there is going to be an epidemic after the fact, a mental health crisis, which, you know, apparently we're already in a mental health crisis and like probably will be as long as like late capitalism lasts, but like, you know, it's the kind of like everyone at the same time suddenly having PTSD is not going to be great for the NHS either.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's something that's going to have to be very much considered, and probably won't be. You know that you know it will be paid lip service to. And you know, just I suppose for those who can't swim at the minute, it's just trying to find a way of tapping into that feeling without getting in the water, and that's very hard. You know, and that you know, I'd say I suppose like meditation can do that, and breathing exercises, and you know, visualizations.
Yeah,
can
and
do
there
that.
There are like but, a lot of things, but because we live in the culture we live in, like those things aren't taught as standard, right? So like, you know, kids aren't taught in school how to meditate, how to be mindful, how to sort of manage their mental health. It feels like it's something we come to later after having a period of anxiety or something. And it just,
yeah.
for me, it just really highlights the fact that like we need to be teaching this stuff to kids from the get-go, so that like they are, I don't want to use the word resilience, it's a bit of a kind of like buzzword.
No, but they're prepared.
Yeah, and just like giving people a variety of skills. So, or like strategies, so that like when shit hits the fan, they can sort of draw on those resources rather than just kind of reach for like quick fixes, or you know, like all when I it's taken me a long time. I'm 37 now, but like you know, all throughout my 20s, my approach to like dealing with my anxiety was like alcohol, drugs, going out, like weird relationships. You know what I mean? But, and that was just because I didn't have anything in my handbook. I didn't have a handbook for like what would be a really like useful way of dealing with these problems. And I think we're getting better at sort of equipping people, but we're not there yet. Like people are still reaching for like really harmful methods of making themselves temporarily feel better, as opposed to like developing more long-term nurturing coping strategies.
I mean, that's being thrown to sharp relief at the minute, isn't it? Because, you know, the talk about how much like, alcohol sales have
yeah,
up
yeah.
in the last month. And, you know, I hardly drink anymore. I think I've had, like, you know, 3 drinks in 2020. And that's been, like, a big, big part of my, I don't want to call it recovery, but, like, my, you know, my ability to, you know, deal with my own issues.
Has it? And why is that? Is that because, like, what was going on with you and
not it's not a bad relationship with booze. So I love having a drink. It's the hangovers are just so insanely acute, even from like the smallest amount of alcohol.
Yeah,
that I would spend I would be in such a tizzy for like 48 hours afterwards, that it just wasn't worth it. But I had a particularly bad hangover last summer. I'd gone out with some friends in London and had a few drinks, and I had a lovely time. It was like catching up with people I hadn't seen for a long time. And I knew I was overdoing it. And it was just one of those things. I hadn't really drunk much in the run up to that. And then I had like this horrific 3-4 days afterwards.
Did you?
And I was just like, oh, like, well, that's the thing. So if I stop doing that, then I don't have to feel like that anymore. Or I don't have to feel that acute part of it anymore.
And but how then, has that had an impact on your social life, or has it?
Well, I mean, I suppose like having a toddler.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, at the same time, what's really interesting is a lot of my dad mates don't drink or drink very little. So like, if I go out on the very rare occasions that we'll go out for dinner or I'll go to a gig, I'll just drink an alcohol-free beer. I mean, it did help that a very good friend of mine ordered the first time I never actually hung out with him at a gig, fellow dad, kid the same age, he ordered a decaf tea at Father John Misty Shark. and was refused because they don't do hot drinks. So, you know, I feel like I have good company in these.
Yeah,
situations.
That's amazing.
But, you know, it is interesting that, like, you know, everybody's going to have to be given this sort of handbook for dealing with anxiety now. And, like, you know, because we can't buy our way out of this pandemic. Like,
no.
You know, like you're told that you can buy your way out of, you know, all of these kind of problems, you know, buy yourself a yoga class, buy yourself a, you know, swimming lesson, whatever. Like, the way out of it is always free. Like, you know, it's just being able to access those things and knowing how those things are going to help you. And also the problem is you also need the help of other people, and not having human touch and contact to deal with that is quite hard. You know, I know that I found that really important, you know, the social side of swimming for me, which isn't as big a thing for me now, just because, you know, I go alone just because it's like the quickest way to deal with it. But that was a massive thing for me when I was, you know, first starting, you know, first swimming projects, was going with you and other friends.
Yeah.
Know, all of us together.
For me as well, that a big part of that was, to be honest, was having an activity that wasn't about drinking, because my relationship with alcohol was certainly getting better over the last few years, but, you know, historically has been a little bit dicey, has been a little bit like, oh, I'm feeling uncomfortable in a room, so I'm going to counter that by drinking two more pints than is probably a good thing on a Tuesday night, you know. So actually to be able to have an excuse to drive to the coast and be with people and do something funny and weird and interesting and talk without ever, like, you know, it was never going to be like, oh, and now we're going to go and get trashed in the pub, because that just wasn't part of what we were doing.
No.
It was really important for me, I think, and maybe one of the many reasons why I hold it in my mind as this quite golden time, because actually that was quite rare for me. And now it's not rare for me. I do that all the time. But I think part of that was influenced by all of our trips and the camaraderie that we created. And actually, you know, because we didn't have a friendship before, and then we developed a friendship through this shared experience. And it's sort of, yeah, shown me how you can do that. And I'm much more likely now to, like, go for walks with people as an activity. I still love the pub, but, like, it's not the only place to go.
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting to me. Actually, I hadn't even thought of it like that. It was a very intense, you know, situation where I was, like, doing swims, you know, once every week or 2 weeks and throughout the summer. And, you know, you and generally other people would always be with me. And it was, I think I remember feeling quite bereft afterward, like, having done the last one. I really remember coming up to swim with you and Tim Claire, who's been on the podcast before, and I think Joe as well. And I just remember going out and it was just like, this is great. But then afterwards it was like, oh, but it hasn't got any purpose to, like, for me it was like, oh, this hasn't got any purpose to it. I don't have to write about this anymore. And that was a bit, you know, I felt a bit sad about that.
Yeah.
Because, like, I didn't have the momentum behind it. Sure. But I do remember someone saying to me, I can't remember who it was, in a pub, funnily enough, you know, the signposting that of the anxiety and everything around it and the camaraderie around it without booze had been a really important thing for quite a lot of people. And I hadn't even realised that at the time. And it certainly was for me, looking back.
Yeah, and what you're saying about the productivity thing is really interesting. Like, the idea that, like, as soon as it became a blog and then a book, it was sort of, it gives you complete license to do it. Whereas it's a shame, isn't it, to think that we can't create those reasons for ourselves. Like, there's no reason why I couldn't just say, I mean, obviously I can't now because we're in a pandemic, global pandemic. But if, you know, there's no reason why I couldn't decide for myself. And so, like, oh, I'm going to do 100 swims for the blah, blah, blah. And actually, what I am doing is I'm walking the English coast path, like, in bits. And that's my big project. And that is not for a book. I'm not doing a blog. I'm not doing anything. And, like, and that's, like, really important to me, because I think society is, like, is set up, isn't it, to make you feel like you need to be productive all of the time.
Yeah.
And it's just not true. And it's something that we can question all of the time, and I think we should be questioning all the time. And I think that's why, actually, like, I'm hoping as a lot of people who are privileged are doing, trying to find positive things that are coming out of this time now in this pandemic, where you can go, oh, I'm seeing my life slightly differently, and I'm really seeing my addiction to achieving things, the to-do list, ticking things off, only doing things because it makes me feel like I'm optimized and I'm productive. And that is just because I'm a kind of, you know, a victim of this, like, capitalist society. And and we can maybe afford to question that a little bit more in our actions.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing, that I don't swim now for anything other than my own mental benefit.
Good.
That's fine. And that actually is the best reason to do it, you know. And sometimes I might write about it and sometimes I might not. I think at the start of this whole thing, like, the best things I read were, like, do not try and use this time to be more productive, because that's not what it's about. Like, just look at, like, you know, just look after yourself.
And I remember that bit in your book where you talk about how the swims kind of did go a bit sour for a while.
Yeah.
It did feel like you were, like, ticking them off. And that, you know, and so, I mean, thank goodness that you sort of were able to reflect on that at the time and then sort of come back to what you loved. But like, that is just such a, so indicative of the sort of wider societal.
100%. Yeah. It is. It's crazy. I don't know. But yeah, I'm just going to keep swimming until I'm sort of told off by someone a policeman on the beach telling me not to do it anymore.
Well, it's not actually allowed, is it? Like I think
some people understandably are like, don't, you know, the RNLI aren't going to be able to rescue you.
Yeah.
But to be fair, what I will say to that is, yeah, but you know, it depends. Like, you're not going, I'm not swimming out far, and you know, I think I calculate risk all the time.
Yeah, I mean, you're like the most risk averse person I've ever met in my entire life. Like, no.
Thank you.
It's quite the drag, but yeah, like I just, and you've clocked so many swims, and not got into any trouble. So it'd be incredibly bad luck for something to happen at this time. But also, it is your choice, and it is a risk you're taking.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? I think, you know, I'd be intrigued to see how other people feel, but I know that from the way I'm weighing it is, if I don't, I know what my mental health's going to be like.
Right, I think it's a great thing to do now, especially when you're about to have the kid, or when your wife is. But I think it will be interesting to see what happens on the beach in July and August, you know, in Brighton, and what, you know, if they get shut down, like, and how do you shut down a beach?
It's not possible. And the thing is, it's not that, you know, it's not possible just because they don't have the numbers to police it.
Sure.
You can't, like, yeah, when I go down there, you see the police around, and they're friendly, they're fine, but it's not, you know, they're stopping people who are sitting down. Although I was told my wife was taking a walk along the beach last week and said, along the top, and she saw people on the beach approached by the police who were sitting down, and they'd like suddenly get up and start doing star jumps to try and prove. Yeah.
Nice.
It's one way of getting around it.
Yeah. But,
Well, Molly, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Having a proper deep dive, as they would call it, into our swims and anxieties. Thanks very much. I'm
very excited about the next time we can swim together, even if it's in a year's time. All of the water is still there, and it's there waiting for us.
It's going to be there waiting for us. It's going to be a cold winter one, but I don't care. Yeah. Thanks so much, Molly. Cheers.
Thank you.
I really hope you enjoyed my chat with Molly. She's such an amazing person and so whip smart about everything, especially to do with anxiety. She was such an integral part of me learning about my own sort of experience with my mental health and how swimming and being outdoors played a massive role in alleviating that. There'll be more guests hopefully soon on floating, but for now, stay safe, and hopefully I'll see you all in the water later in the summer.